Recording is on.
Okay, welcome to the weekly Trace call. Today is vocab day, if I'm not mistaken. But before we kick it off, remember to review the contributor guidelines and sign the contributor agreement if you are making substantial contributions. Diving right into vocab pull requests. You know what? Before we do with this, could I ask one of you guys to take a few notes while we are doing this? Because as always, for whatever reason, I'm not getting recorded. I'm not getting picked up by the transcriber. Super frustrating.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Thanks a ton, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Need to fix this. We should make an issue of it. Anyway, starting here on pull requests, we have two. Hey, both from me. I almost forgot about them. It's about a week back I did these. The first one is adding type to CTPAT, the credential subject of CTPAT. What brought this about is our chart of undefined terms. So that's what brought this up, and it's just a bug in the example. That's all there is to say about that. So I only have a single approval on this. Can I ask one of you guys to approve? And while you do that, would anyone object to merging pull request 581? No objections. I'm going to push ahead although there's only one. There you go. Thanks, Mahmoud. That's awesome. Mahmoud, are you on the call? He's not on the call, but it seems like... Oh, Chris, that was you. Thank you, Chris. I'll go ahead and merge. Totally uncontroversial anyway. Next is same background, same sorts of bug reporting. This was on the immediate import and packing list. Various couple of missing types, a couple of attribute, a couple of missing arrays, a couple of copy paste errors on the term definition, and a missing type in the example. Little of all the usual suspects that lead to undefined terms. So, thanks Chris for the approval. Any objections to merging 582? Great, I'll merge. That was it for Trace vocab. Switching to interop. I suspect we have more to talk about over here. Let's see. Link first. Voila. And starting from the bottom. So Chris, you have the first one, 396, which is coming here.
Yes. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep. Perfect.
All right. So this is in response to issue number 395. And that has to do with making sure that when you post credential status options to the credential issue endpoint, that if you do post that, it's an optional item, you must include the type property. And that is because VCAPI has got that in there. It's very clearly required, but we had it as an optional item in our OpenAPI schema. And I think we all agreed this was the right thing to do last time we talked about it, but Mahmoud had asked if we could also do this for the update credential status endpoint. And I went to do that this morning and realized that we had already done that quite some time ago with PR 366. So I would like Mahmoud to re-review this before we merge, but I think this is probably ready to go.
Okay, and Mahmoud did not show up. No, did you request a...
I did, yeah. I re-requested a review from him, but it was just this morning, so he probably doesn't have, hasn't had time to look at it.
Sure. So what are you... I would suggest we postpone for another week?
Yes, agreed.
I'll make a note.
Looks like Miss, the transcriber, is picking up everyone but you.
Yes, it's so weird. Yeah. Oh, hey, Sam. Thanks for joining.
Oh, hi. I'm working.
Would you want to introduce yourself to the group, since it's a new name around here?
Sure. Sam Kern, I work for Indicio. And have been involved in the DIDCOM efforts at the DIF, and involved in the ARIES community as well.
Beautiful. Great that you're here. I believe we met at IIW. So yeah, great. Okay, so 396, we are leaving that for another week. Then we have 399. Here. I don't think this is, well, I'm in doubt if this is how we would want to do it. So, context. This is a topic both of this and a couple of other PRs. What this does is call with a token, call for the issue ID. We have this discussion on pull request 410, and I think that's probably where we want to continue with this. Also, the action that we left on this was to make a diagram, which is also coming in a subsequent pull request. So given that, I would suggest we skip this and move ahead and then come back to this, and I suspect we can probably close it. Chris, oh, you unqueued yourself?
I was queuing to say exactly what you just said.
Okay. All right, let's move on then. So next on the list is 407. yeah, absolutely a... I don't know how I, like, brain fart, frankly, the way I'd done it last time, just updating the verifiable presentation example, that didn't make much sense. So now I did the actual JSON schemas. Chris, I'm just seeing your comments for the first time. Is that something I should just go ahead and commit? Is
yeah, this is just for quote consistency to
replace. Oh, okay, yeah, that's completely uncut. Right. Excellent. Yeah, I love it. Okay. Before we kind of discuss more around this, because the next discussion this is leading to is where we, like, how much do we want to restrict around here? But let's just focus on the schemas first and then maybe do that, like, next week or something. So what do I have? I have no approvals. I'm not going to merge it. Ori, I believe I resolved your comments. And now, Chris, I've also resolved yours. I'm trying to, like, fish for a couple of quick approvals here so we can merge.
I will approve.
Beauty. Ori, are you okay that we merge this as well? We talked a little bit about it on Slack also.
Probably. Are we looking at 407?
407, that's right.
And at one point requested changes. We had talked about it. I'm okay merging over top of if you've addressed the changes.
I have.
Yep, you have. Approved.
Excellent. Checks have failed. Oh, Russell, please.
Do you want to kick the transcriber? This is, I think the notes will be pretty confusing.
Yes. I think we ought to disable the transcriber and take normal scribe notes from now on. I'm tired of having it say things that I didn't say that are offensive that go into minutes.
Can I do that?
Can you just do it like any other? I was thinking it might count as a participant, yeah.
Oh, right. I stopped subtitles now. That seems to have also stopped it. Well, there are some checks failing on... What is that? Oh. I'm not exactly sure what's failing here. Anyway, I'll have to look at this and come back and fix it. That's too bad. I had you both approve. I'll fix the fail for next time. Okay. Enough of that. The next is 410. Chris. This is where the magic happens. So again, this is about moving to a multi-tenant platform support. So we are both multi and single tenant platform support. And there are some different ways we can do that. What I've suggested here is to specifically on the unauthenticated call for the DID document, rip the DID web apart and make that request directly. My idea with that was let's, for all subsequent getting DID documents, do that with a proper resolve, which is authenticated. That was my idea. Chris, I see you've commented. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, so my thought on this in general and with the conformance suite is that each part of the conformance suite should be only testing one endpoint. So I'd prefer not to go through authenticated resolution because that's going through a second endpoint. And if that fails, then the endpoint that you're actually testing will also fail, but not for an obvious reason. I'd prefer to treat the information we're getting from the DID JSON as input to that test and make the cache request for the DID.json up front and use that for any request that needs information out of that. That was my thought process in not wanting to create a authenticated request to do this. By this, I mean to retrieve the DID JSON.
Okay. Ori seems to be in favor. And you would do that with how you, the way you suggested that we take that little hacky script, and make a proper method out of it and use that also whenever we need it, basically.
Yeah. I'm suggesting, well, I have a couple of change suggestions here. But let's address the first one. And that's that in the, root folder of the conformance suite, we add a function similar to the one that gets the access token and caches it. We create another one that retrieves the DID JSON and caches it. And then we create some helper functions to get the data we need out of it. My other change request has to do with how you're converting DID web identifiers into URLs. There is a bug in that code that I created a specific change request just to fix that.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
I also PR'd that repo.
Oh, cool. Ori, you were...
So I'm not sure if these PRs or change suggestions align with what I'm about to say, but I think we should talk about just high level, like what's the objective here? I think there's a set of requirements that we intend to communicate to parties that want to pass the tests. And those requirements are, you know, you will provide these values, these fields. And if you do, you could pass the tests. I think what we have kind of been dancing around here has been, is a specific DID a requirement that's communicated or not? Or, you know, is the DID being inferred from the API endpoint? I think we're just dancing around having that conversation, and maybe it'd be better just to have that direct conversation as a group. So, I mean, just to be clear, like for this kind of test suite, I'm in favor of us telling people how it's going to be. If it's an interoperability test suite around HTTP APIs and DID web is the chosen method, it's okay for us to say, you're required to provide a DID web. It's required to support authentication and assertion. Those are the kinds of things that we can say that's specific to this work that you might not say in a more generic, you know, standards testing approach where you're not trying to restrict DID methods at all, right? Like, but here I think we are in agreement that DID web is the DID method that you're supposed to be using to pass some of these tests. And so maybe it's a simple case of here's the DID web that I'm intending to use. It's a new test requirement. I want to make sure that the experience that we're creating for folks is as simple as possible. And if we're doing backflips to avoid just telling them to include a DID web in their configuration, maybe there's a simpler way by just telling them to include that DID web. That's it.
Well, I think that if we tell them to provide us with a DID web, that would save us having to fetch it from their implementation. But part of the requirements of the implementation is that they provide a DID web, right, at a known URL. So I think, you know, having them conform to the implementation and not go through the extra step of providing us with that DID URL as part of onboarding is probably easier, unless I misunderstand what you're saying.
No, I think you are. I think you're saying the same thing that I'm saying in a different set of words. We should communicate the requirements, and the requirements should be minimized. And if we agree to both of those as design objectives, that should help us make concrete change suggestions.
So I think I agree with that in principle, but I'm not sure that it relates to what we're talking about in this PR.
It's not completely unrelated. I guess if we wanted to leave it generic, then we couldn't do any of this stuff that we're looking at here. Like there wouldn't necessarily be a DID web to tear apart.
So the PR in question, PR 410, it's about the DID web endpoint, correct?
Yes.
And the DID web endpoint is an endpoint you use to create a DID web, correct? It has to exist in order for a DID web to exist.
Yes.
Okay. I'm with you.
So this endpoint can't be authorization protected or the DID web isn't resolvable, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Right.
Okay. So in validating that participant has a version of this endpoint available, the conformance requirement is really that we're basically just trying to do a round trip test. You told us you had this DID web. I'm going to convert that DID web into an endpoint and call it. And if I get a response, it's good. And that's kind of what this current pull request implements. Is that correct?
Yes.
And Chris, do you feel like that's the right approach for validating that the DID web provided is implemented according to the conformance requirements?
except for the suggested change in the bottom. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm speaking on your behalf, Chris.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think?
The way this is implemented is one way to do what we're doing, but I disagree with the way that we're doing it, and I think we should do it in a function in the utility area.
Yes.
Can you explain more what you mean by that? I don't have enough context to understand your counterproposal.
So the goal here is to provide a way to extract from an implementation's did web certain information points, such as the presentation endpoint,
mm-hmm.
and the issuer ID, and any data that we might need in order to make other requests to test conformance on certain endpoints that rely on that data.
But it's primarily just the exchange endpoints, correct? It's not all of the endpoints in the tests, or is it all of them?
Also issuer ID.
Issuer ID is I think given as the did web. So you don't need to resolve the did web to know that that's the issuer. But so exchange endpoints are definitely a thing that you do need to resolve the did web to communicate with at this point, as far as I understand the existing requirements.
Yes. So think about the exchange endpoint testing. So we may have 75 tests. I'm just pulling that number out, right? Do we also want to make 75 authenticated requests to get the did JSON and pull out the presentation endpoint so that we can then make that presentation test request? My answer to that is no, we don't want to do that because we're not testing the authenticated, slash identifiers, colon, did endpoint. That's not the purpose of the test set that I'm talking about. I would rather cache the did JSON by making a request to, their normal did web URL and save that and then pull the information out when we need to make a performance test that requires it.
So can I restate your proposal in my own language and you tell me if I've gotten it right?
Yes.
Your proposal is before running exchange endpoint tests, I should make a request to resolve the did web for that particular endpoint, cache those results, and then anytime I need the exchange endpoint information, I go to the cache for those tests. Is that correct?
Yes, but when you say resolve the did web, are you talking about going to, path slash did JSON or slash identifiers colon did web?
The latter.
Let me be super
clear. Okay.
The value of the in order for that cache to populate properly without authentication, we would need to convert the did web directly and then hit that endpoint directly.
Yes, and that's what I propose.
Okay, good.
Okay.
So to be clear, there wouldn't be any did resolution endpoint as part of constructing the did web cache. You would convert the did web string into a URL and call that URL without any authentication header. You'd then preserve the JSON response as a cache for that did web, and then you'd access that cache anytime you needed it.
Precisely.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that makes sense, and it would cut down on an authenticated did resolution as the beginning part of probably nearly every test.
Right.
Good.
And there would be an entire separate suite for testing that slash identifiers endpoint.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And this was my suggestion. Just this all makes sense. I'm on board. The two things that we still need to discuss is regarding the issue ID. That is, I think, Chris, we've been kind of going in the wrong direction there, because what Ori just said is that's the did web. So why are we trying to make a method that generates that from the base URL? That seems like a mistake. Yeah, Chris?
I agree with you 100%, and that's a holdover from pulling that information out of also known as.
Yeah, completely agree with what you just said. I think it's just legacy of how we got to where we are today.
Great. That also makes the... So it's limited to the exchange endpoint. Cool.
I think Paul's on the queue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I just had a question. I'm new to the group. Authenticated DID resolution. Can someone post me a link? I don't know exactly what that is other than what it sounds like it is to me. I'm just curious because I didn't see that in a DID spec.
Sure. Someone with access to the OpenAPI specification should share the link in the chat, but I'll give you a verbal description of what it is. You know, effectively, every implementer stands up a software implementation of the specification, which describes these HTTP endpoints. There is an endpoint called, you know, slash identifiers that looks like pretty much identical to the DID resolution spec, the HTTP DID resolution spec, which is another W3C CCG community group item. And we implement that endpoint as an endpoint that we demonstrate interoperability around, but with the additional requirement that you must be authenticated to call that endpoint. So the main difference between our endpoint that's under test and, for example, the Universal Resolver is that anybody can call the Universal Resolver to get a resolution anytime they want, whereas this authenticated DID resolution endpoint, you need a client access you need a scope bound to DID, the ability to resolve an identifier, and you need to be authenticated to call that endpoint.
Thank you. That definitely explains what it is. Just to take one more question, can you explain why it's that way?
Yeah.
And why do we need to be authenticated for the purpose of this testing?
Yeah, so we generally, in the context of these tests, are thinking about these software implementations as being like exposed on the public internet, and something that you can really stand behind, and we're trying to test that kind of configuration. So with the Universal Resolver today, it doesn't require any authentication, and it's actually in a developer sort of friendly sort of configuration, and there's a disclaimer there. It says not for production use, et cetera. And you, as a business, you might take the position that you intend to stand up a web server to host HTTP-based DID resolution, and you are not going to require authentication for it. I'm not going to do that because that web server could cost me money, and if some bot finds it and decides it's going to make a billion network requests, without authentication, there's nothing to stop me from getting a gigantic bill. And so our test configuration sort of is built around the assumption that you should probably secure your endpoints that you expose over the internet.
Ah, I get it, Ori. So you're saying that, like, this is a version of a DID resolution that's protected by an API. It's not like a DID web specification where there's authentication to fetch DID.json.
So there's two things you just said there. The endpoint that we're talking about is essentially the Universal Resolver endpoint, but with authentication requiring a specific scope. And that will work for any DID method that Resolver endpoint supports. We've only agreed to support DID web and DID key so far here in this group. So, you know, if you tried to call if you passed an ion DID to one of the Resolver endpoints for any of the folks who are registered for testing, it wouldn't resolve here. Probably. If it did, that would be a violation of our conformance testing and agreements.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So next steps on this is how we move forward. Chris, can I make a suggestion? I'm kind of very much in your turf here, and I'm not a particularly good JavaScript developer, if even a bad one. May I suggest that we maybe merge this and then give you green light to move this piece of code, and we can debate whether we want to commit your suggestion also. Move that into the service endpoint and kind of take it from here. Is that a suitable course of action?
I would like to counterpropose that I create a new PR.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
If you leave this one open, I will base it on what you have started.
Perfectly cool. We want to talk about your suggestion, or I guess that really belongs in the other repo, and you said you'd done a PR there, so.
Yeah, but this one doesn't use that other repo directly, so this change would need to be incorporated. And this is, I don't know if we want to discuss that, or I think this was code copied out of one of your repos.
Yes.
I know you have a lot, so you may not even know what we're talking about.
Can you share the link to the thing that you want me to look at?
This is in, yes, I will find it. It's in the chat.
Yeah, so this code is code from one of our open source packages for DidWeb. It converts, URLs to, well, DIDs to endpoints and endpoints to DIDs. It sounds like you're suggesting that it's missing some character escaping for port numbers or something like that?
Yeah, it's assuming the port number will be specified following a bare colon versus a URL escapes colon.
Interesting, yeah. So, I mean, tests around port numbers in DIDWeb are pretty weak. We do use the port number-based DIDWebs. I'm wondering what the problem is here with what we've got. Is the code on?
So I PR'd this earlier today. He said it as well.
It's.
Oh, I see.
PR 410.
With port. Yeah, that does seem like I'm surprised that we didn't encounter this before, but this looks great to me. Thank you.
So yeah, I'll just include that in the code when I
work. Great. I'll just commit it here. So we have that locked down, and we're delaying this. Oh, actually, let's give it some kind of pending close or something label. Pending close. So once you've done your thing, Chris, we'll close this up as well. I made a issue for 26 about switching the get issue ID as well.
Perfect. Thank you.
Excellent discussion. I love this. That's great. Now let's move on to the next one, which is 411.
So 411 is one of mine, and we had a conversation in issue 351 and some other related issues about whether or not when you post a credentials issue, if you should be allowed to include the created field in for the proof, so that you can specify when a proof is created, not when the credential is valid, but when a proof is created. And the decision was no, you should not be allowed to do that. So we're going to remove that item from the schema. And this is the PR to do that and modify some tests, I think.
Sounds good to me. All right. I just approved it. Sorry. Let's see, that's you. You're lacking an approver for 411.
Yeah, it looks like you're the only approver. Yeah.
So just so I understand, 411 says the proof created date is not a required argument, or it?
We are removing it from the OpenAPI spec because we want the server to set that.
So you don't want the server to be able to backdate a signature on behalf of an authorized client?
That is correct.
It's interesting. Why?
Hang on, let me find the discussion here.
351.
I mean, the number one problem this will create is if you're trying to generate a exact match for a signature, you won't be able to do that with these endpoints anymore because you would need to be able to set this value to have the signature be 100% deterministic. If you can't set this value, then the signature will always be different because the server will always assign a new date. So it's useful for testing and for backdating signatures, which is a thing that the server could be entitled to do if you believe the server is entitled to do it. Yeah, I mean, my preference would be that the option remained and that it was defaulted when not present.
Okay, so that the initial reason that this came up was because there was some question about whether or not we should be testing if the returns created value should match the one presented. This is from issue 352.
I think on the test side of this, I would expect there to be a valuable test there that a server implementation would set the created property correctly, and that it would set it when it was defaulted correctly. And I would want to see separate tests for each.
Okay. So I don't have a horse in the game as to whether or not we include this or don't include this. My concern was how should we test it because we were not doing so appropriately.
Yeah. Yeah. I would cover both cases. The case where the caller specifies a created date and then the signature is backdated to the created date, and the case where the caller does not specify a created date and the created date is set by the server.
Okay. So NIST to move forward, I believe this PR needs to be declined.
Yep.
351 needs to be modified to indicate that we are not going to remove it. And I'll probably need to redo the PR for issue 352 that expects it not to be there.
All right. Should we just close the PR? And can I ask you to update 351?
Yes, I will update 351.
Do we want to leave them comment on the pull requests? Just close.
Let's comment and close. I can handle comment and closing all of these after.
Thank you. That's great. Cool.
I'll do that offline.
There is a nasty edge case related to this that we might want to call out in the comments. The same thing applies to VCJWT, but under a different location. So if you set, and this makes the interface really weird if you think about it, but if you set created as the caller and you asked for a JWT, you would expect the IAT value in the JWT to be set, which is confusing because you might think IAT is issuance date, but it's not. NBF is issuance date. So if you're supporting JWTs, this becomes really important to understand, basically. Because you have the same scenario where, you know, you're issuing a JWT and you want to be able to backdate the IAT.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good to know.
Okay, let's push forward. We are at 412 now. Chris, another one from you.
So, this one is mine. This is for adding some positive testing for the credentials verify endpoint. Specifically, it looks like there was a typo in my script that generated request bodies. So it was missing a colon in the key pair controller. And I changed the issuer to did key because we want to make sure that all of the endpoints can resolve it. So using a fake resolver, a fake did web probably wasn't a good idea there. I think Mahmoud brought that up. That's essentially what's happening here. Just a couple of positive tests.
So I think what I'm about to say is not specifically relevant to your PR, but since it touches the same dependencies, I feel like I should say it now.
Mm-hmm.
We're aware that elliptic curve point conversion between ED25519 and X25519 is not a thing that DidKey should be doing moving forward. As far as I'm aware, nobody has updated their DidKey implementation to remove that. You know, it's considered to be a safe security thing, but it's also considered to be a mistake security thing that we're not going to keep doing. And I wonder if this DidKey implementation stuff that we're doing here is really, I mean, it seems sort of related to these issues. And I wonder if ED25519 isn't the right, is that the right key pair, key type to really be supporting? Because I mean, I think the history of and how we get here is we chose DidKey because in the beginning, because it was easy. We chose ED25519 signature 2018 as the only data integrity proof because it was easy. And we have opportunities to sort of move these decisions forward from where we are now. Like we could say, actually, we think ES256 is actually easier for everyone and JSON web signature should be the new default. And then you wouldn't have this, you know, point conversion issue in DidKey. And, you wouldn't have the questions over whether ED25519 is FIPS compliant or not. So I'm just pointing out that these dependencies that are kind of starting to show up in this repo are raising other questions as they show up. And we might want to answer some of those questions before we feel like this is set in stone. It might not be the right thing to do on the current PR. I'm just asking the question, like, folks on the call excited about ED25519 and this DidKey stuff, or are you thinking maybe it's better to just do P256 and ES256 in the future?
I don't have any specific knowledge I think that would be helpful in answering that question right now, but I do have general knowledge in that going with a known implementation that you don't like in a project early on is a bad idea.
So are you arguing for not pushing forward with this PR?
I think we should push forward with this PR for sure, but to answer Ori's question about, in general, whether or not we should be using ED25519 versus some other implementations, I think a better one and we know about it now, we should switch.
I think there is a better option now. I think did JWK with a NIST curve would be a better entry point for most people. And that's a newer thing that wasn't, you know, available when we started this work. But it is available now. And it supports NIST curves and JWKs. And, you know, it's probably the thing that we should be moving towards. If we want to reduce the mental load on people who are trying to pass these test suites, asking them to understand DidKey is several orders of magnitude higher than asking them to understand DidJWK.
Russell, please.
I recalled my hand. I didn't hear the JWK at first. what the exact acronym was.
All right, but let's switch back to the PR at hand. Do we have? I'm good with this one, and they do it stepwise. Or are you also okay with the?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just raising the concerns around these dependencies as we're seeing them.
It might be a good topic for an issue.
I'll file an issue for it.
I'm sorry?
I can file an issue for it.
Great. That's perfect. All right. I'll go ahead and merge this one. And merge. Let's move forward. Where did the pull request go? Here. It's the next one. 4.13, right? Chris, you as well.
So this one, this is a follow-up on a code change you made earlier to remove the code property from errors. There was some remaining schemas that still were explicitly setting that value. There, it's just overriding the base error and changing the code. So this is just to pull those out.
Thank you. We're cleaning that out. Any objections to merging? 4.13. Ori, you're on the queue.
That's stale.
Okay. Hearing no objections, so although there's only me approving, I'll take the liberty to merge it because it's non-controversial and we've already talked about this topic. What's next? 4.14.
So this is another one of mine, and the purpose of this PR is to introduce two new specific error responses to use when the request body is not conformant to the expected schema, and the second one when the request body contains an invalid signature. And these are specifically used in the verifier tests to differentiate reasons that the implementation is throwing an error. Previously, it was just straight 400 bad request, but I wanted to still be able to return a 400 error with the specific issue that the signature in the request is not correct.
Okay. So you're not changing the code. You're not adding code. You're just adding description.
Correct, yeah.
And whatever else, yeah.
So the response is still 400. It's just a different different message that we can utilize in tests to check against.
And how much do you see that we would be testing this, conformance testing this?
Probably in all of them. All the conformance tests will make use of this.
Okay.
Well, not all of them. All the ones for credential verifier, the negative
tests. Yeah, okay. All right. Only one approval from me just now. Anyone else care to approve? This one I'm slightly more hesitant to not wait for two approvals. Ori, are you okay with 4.14?
Looking at it now, differentiate between 400 errors. We had a conversation about it. We're using the message body to distinguish between categories of 400 error. Looks accurate. Good to me. Wait a second, as I think about that. Invalid signature, the request body contains an invalid signature. That's not a 400 error. That's a, the client isn't wrong for asking for a a verifier to verify a signature that's malformed. That's not an error by the client.
Okay. What would you propose?
I would expect the client to get a 200 response from the verification endpoint with some status indicating that the verification failed. Right? Because the client didn't make a mistake. They just asked a question. And the question was well-formed, so the 400, so there shouldn't be a 400 error because the question is well-formed.
Okay. I will add a note, and let's move on from this one.
Good point. Good catch. And I'm making a very meta comment here. Yeah, okay. Next, 419. Another Chris. And I think that'll be the last one for today.
Yeah, so this one is just a couple of errors in linting the Open API spec that I fixed.
There is a typo on request. Which just caught my eye.
I'm sorry, I'm not following you.
You're misspelling request on a description. I just couldn't do it. Otherwise, what are these? Oh, you're removing client credentials. Great. Okay. Yeah, it looks good to me.
Yeah, those bits of the auth flow are not relevant for client credentials grants. They were for, I forget what the other grant names are, but.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And there's a conflict here, so I'm happy to fix that if you guys want. Either wait or merge it offline. It's up to you.
I'll give you a note to merge.
So, just out of curiosity, are folks expecting to be able to load the Open API specification, enter client credentials configuration into that specification, target a remote server, and authenticate to that remote server hosted in that client app, and then make try it out type requests with authorization? Like, that's a description of a feature we're intending for our Open API specification to support, correct?
It seems like we've laid the groundwork for that, but I've never actually tried that.
That's a thing. That's a thing that, in my opinion, if your API spec doesn't work with that, you haven't built a valid API spec. That's like one of the ways to validate that your API spec is valid. So I think we should push for that kind of thing. I would expect to be able to pick a server from the list, have my secrets that I know, enter them, and then try it out and have it work.
I am in favor of that and suggest a new issue.
Definitely.
Amiss, as far as I'm aware, that should work because that's how our internal APIs work, but I'm assigning you to create that issue and validate that.
Yep.
And we may end up needing to copy some internal stuff into this repo in order to enable that for others.
Okay, that last part I didn't get.
So I'm saying that this works as far as I'm aware for our endpoints, and if it's not working for this work item, we should help.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Absolutely. I will make that ticket. And with that, we want to wrap up a little bit early and give time to download and do the minutes. Would anyone volunteer to run through that terrible process?
Happy to do that.
Oh man,
you're a hero.
Yes, two heroes.
Complete heroes.
You fight that out among yourselves. Thank you both, and thanks everyone for participating. Pleasure as always, and I'll see you next week.
Just please kick and stop recording.
Oh yes, yes. Wow. Thank you for reminding me. Yes.